Coming up on Healthy Aging.
And so often the first question that is asked to me when I give a presentation is, what is the difference? Are they distinguishable? What is dementia versus Alzheimer's disease?
Welcome to Healthy Aging, brought to you by the South Shore Coalition for Mental Health and Aging. Our goal is to provide our listeners with resources to increase their overall well-being. My name is Jonathan Guzman, and on today's program, we will continue to highlight our annual Caregiver Symposium from 2016, focusing on brain health. Our coalition president, Debbie Kanin, who was also the director of admissions at the Sun Towers Retirement Community, which sponsored the symposium, had this to say. Rather than educating our caregivers on the decline of their loved ones, this year the thought was to help our caregivers maintain their brain function while they are being tasked with caring for their loved ones. According to the USF Health Bird Alzheimer's Institute, more than 5 million people struggle with Alzheimer's disease. This, unlike cancer or heart disease, presently cannot be prevented, slowed, or cured. Presently in South Shore, free memory screenings are being offered in 5 locations throughout our community. This is done monthly through the South Shore Coalition for Mental Health and Aging, and the goal is to hopefully catch a decline while options to assist are still a possibility. Among the speakers presenting, we were honored to have Dr. Jessica Banco, Associate Professor of Molecular Medicine at the USF College of Medicine and the Associate Institute Director and Chief Operating Officer for the USF Health Bird Alzheimer's Institute. Dr. Banco provided an in-depth discussion of both dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Before proceeding, a special thank you is due to the Sun Towers Retirement Community for their annual sponsorship of the symposium, as well as the USF Health Bird Alzheimer's Institute for their participation in making the show possible. And now, Dr. Jessica Banco.
Today, I'm going to address with you some general themes that are emerging in Alzheimer's disease with respect to both the management and treatment of individuals who are today living with the disease, as well as what is on the horizon for tomorrow. What approaches are currently being pursued on the research front, both for individuals who are diagnosed as well as the younger population who may be at risk. So we're going to talk not only cure or reversing the disease, but we're going to talk about prevention. I am going to have to kind of stand more in the middle because I came not quite as prepared as I should in terms of slide progression. But the first thing I want to talk about, Bernadette gave us such a wonderful introduction to cognition that I can just kind of fast forward now that we all understand what we're talking about when we discuss cognitive ability or cognition. This is what that black box brain outcomes are. And at the Institute, we are missioned to address not only treatment and management of Alzheimer's disease and research towards a cure, but our programs are designed to benefit caregivers and individuals of dementia at large. And so often the first question that is asked to me when I give a presentation is, what is the difference? Are they distinguishable? What is dementia versus Alzheimer's disease? Or I've had a number of individuals visit the table this morning and say, my husband does, or my wife, or the person I'm giving care to doesn't have Alzheimer's disease, they have dementia. And so let's talk about what exactly is dementia to begin with. Dementia, and Alzheimer's disease are often used interchangeably in conversation. And in some cases, that's appropriate, and in some cases, it isn't. Dementia is kind of an umbrella term. It is a descriptive group of symptoms that people can show outwardly to the rest of the world. And it can be caused by a number of different health conditions. So dementia is experiencing trouble with your working memory. Maybe it is having aphasia or apraxias. This is when you have that tip of the tongue feeling. You know the word you want to say, or you feel like you should know the word, but it's just not coming. That's having the knowledge of how to execute activities of daily living, but not being able to do them in either the correct sequence or with the same effectiveness that you feel intellectually you should be able to, but you just can't will the body or will the parts to get it done in the way that you want it to. Perhaps it's having trouble navigating to the store, to common locations that you've frequented all of your life or multiple times a week, and now you find yourself getting lost on the way home, possibly not knowing where you are in time as far as the date and as far as current events are concerned, kind of getting caught up in a past experience or a past time in history. Not understanding those around you are who they are today in November 2016 and mistaking them for somebody, a family relation or a friend or companion from an earlier time in your life. Those are all symptoms, and when put together, we would call those symptoms dementia. But the disease or the health condition that is happening to the body that is causing those symptoms of dementia can be many. And if we were to make a pie chart out of all of the different health conditions that could cause those symptoms of dementia, we would find that predominantly the cause or the culprit is Alzheimer's disease. About 65, some statistics show upwards of 70-75% of the time. It is Alzheimer's disease that is happening in the brain and giving rise to those outward symptoms of dementia. Less frequently, albeit a large portion of the pie, is cardiovascular disease. So if you've had one major stroke event or multiple small events, you may have heard them referred to as TIAs or mini strokes. Once you have suffered a series of those, the combinatorial effect can give rise to dementia. There are different diseases of the brain that are similar to Alzheimer's in that there's stuff in the brain that doesn't belong there, but it's not Alzheimer stuff. And where they reside in the brain gives rise to different diseases like Lewy body disease, frontotemporal dementia, or Pick's disease. These are all dementing conditions. And then there is also a group of health conditions that are readily treatable and reversible associated with our metabolomics or our diet and nutrition. So having a thyroid condition that has gone undiagnosed or untreated or mismanaged can give rise to symptoms of dementia, but could be readily addressed. Having nutritional imbalances in some critical vitamins, like vitamin B complex, or also in folic acid and other nutritional supplements that the body needs, can cause dementing symptoms. Simply having an untreated infection. A lot of women, for example, as we become older adults, we can experience UTIs that don't actually come with the accompanying pain of when we were a younger female, and so we don't know we have a urinary tract infection, and if left untreated, can give rise to symptoms of dementia. So there's a big pie of health conditions that cause dementia. The reason we so frequently default to Alzheimer's disease is because, as I said, it does occupy the largest proportion of that pie. But importantly, there are other conditions, and this is why it's so important that we have a comprehensive diagnosis performed by an expert who can rule out, importantly, those reversible or treatable forms of health condition that give rise to dementia. And because what I'll discuss are some of the management strategies, the pharmacological, the drugs that are available for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease are sometimes specific to Alzheimer's disease and may be counterproductive if given to somebody with a different form of dementing condition. So that's kind of the first lesson we're going to learn today. So what is Alzheimer's disease? We know that the symptoms of Alzheimer are dementia, and we just discussed what those are. But what is actually happening to the brain that's causing those symptoms? That's what's on the image up here. It is twofold, and you must have both features in order to have Alzheimer's disease. It's an actual change in what the brain looks like and is composed of. The first change happens outside of the cells. And if you imagine all of us in this room as cells of the brain, then we would all be called neurons. And our job would be to connect and talk with our neighbors. And all of those connections would be unique and specific to different sensory input or memories that we have. And so it's kind of like if we put our fingers together, our hand locked hands, and maybe wrapped our ankles together and played the game of telephone, like from when you were a child, and you start the message by squeezing your hand, and I whisper something in your ear, and then you go along and we form a whole network, and by the time it comes back to me, we see if the message is the same, this that game of telephone. It's kind of how the neurons of the brain work. They physically connect with one another, and they pass messages along their network, and those messages are the memory traces themselves. They are unique and specific. The pattern with which it lights up is unique and specific to each sensory event or memory we have. Now imagine, as we get older, a protein that's in our body. We don't ingest it. We don't get it from the environment. We've been making it in our body since birth. It is from our genes, our DNA. And presumably all our life, it's doing something we need it to do. We're not sure what that exact job is today. But it's there and it's not causing us harm until a certain point where it stops behaving. Kind of like other things when we get older. It just stops behaving like it's supposed to. And when this protein stops behaving, it gets produced in a different shape, a different size, a different form. And it becomes very sticky. And it recruits all of other friends that are just like it. And it builds a wall between the neurons. So now, if you and I were neighboring neurons and we were trying to play our game of telephone and something happened to trigger our memory, but a wall of this protein called amyloid was built between us, do you think we'd have a very good game? Now, we would be physically blocked by this wall. And that's what happens. This is the amyloid plaques that develop outside and between the communicating cells of the brain. This is the first feature that must be present in order for the Alzheimer diagnosis to be correct. The presence of these walls is twofold. Not only do they disrupt the communication that should be taking place, but the brain doesn't like them there. It knows they're not supposed to be there. And so it starts to mount an attack on them, but that attack is not very helpful. If you have a splinter in your pinky, brain knows it's not supposed to be there, right? And it mounts an attack, an immune response. And your finger starts getting swollen, and it's really sore to touch. And maybe it kind of gets pussy because your body's trying to eat away at that little splinter of wood in there. The same thing happens inside our brain in response to the presence of the amyloid walls. We mount an immune response. The area around the presence of the plaque becomes inflamed. The body is trying to account for this wall that's there and trying to get rid of it. And so all the cells around the wall get squeezed by the inflammation, and they start feeling like, I can't do my job. So not only are the cells right there that are prohibited from interacting by the plaque, but the environment all around the plaque is now feeling like, I can't get the job done. What happens when cells in their body know they can't get their job done? They die. We have programmed cell death as a response to cells that can no longer do what they're born to do. And so the cells around the plaques die. This is the first insult, the first change in our brain that happens when we have Alzheimer's disease and gives rise to those downstream outcomes of dementia. The second happens subsequent to the formation of the plaque walls, and this is a change inside the cells themselves. Now, the cells of the brain are very elegant. They're kind of like us. They have a beautiful body and long projections. It's those long projections that do the communicating, play the game of telephone, and it's the cell body that generates the energy and generates all of the components of the cell that make that job possible. Now, those things have to get from the cell body all the way out to the long projections. How do they do that? Kind of like how we get our Tropicana oranges to everywhere else in the country, along a railroad system. And that railroad system is supported by an infrastructure of tau protein. The tau proteins are like the railroad ties holding the tracks in line. And again, like amyloid, it doesn't get managed properly as we age. And what happens is it doesn't hold the tracks in alignment. And so that infrastructure gets all tangled up inside the cell. If you look under a microscope, it actually looks like a tangled up kind of hairball inside the cell. And that is why the second feature of Alzheimer is called tau tangles. We're not that creative. We've got amyloid plaques and we have tau tangles. Both of these features are developing inside the brains of individuals with Alzheimer's disease. And as a result, the cells can't do their job and die. This is why we have the outward symptoms of dementia. Does that make sense? It's important for that to make sense to everybody before we go on. Okay, so now that we know what it is, what is our risk for having this happen, for having the plaque walls begin to build and the tangles begin to form? Well, the first for features we just described is advancing age. We know the more birthdays you enjoy, the greater your risk of developing Alzheimer's is. 1 in 65 have Alzheimer's disease. That advances to almost 2, if not 3, to 1 of individuals 85 years old have Alzheimer's disease. So advancing age, for the reasons described, the mishandling of amyloid protein and tau protein causes the walls to build and the tangles to form and gives rise to Alzheimer. The second is our family history. If we have a mother, a father, a sibling, or a child with Alzheimer's disease, it does increase our likelihood of developing the disease. It is not, however, our predetermined legacy. We're going to talk a little bit more on the next slide about this. But our family history does impact risk, and it is one of those things we can't change. We can't change our birthdays. We get older whether we try not to. And we can't change our family history. The things we can change, however, are head trauma. Head trauma, regardless of when in your life you experienced it as a child, perhaps falling off a bicycle, playing contact sports, as an adult, traffic injuries, participating in military activities, even just falling in our homes or in other area, in other environments, all of these activities can give rise to head injuries. And head injuries does increase our risk for developing Alzheimer's disease. Finally, there is definitely a heart-head connection. All of the risk factors you hear for cardiovascular disease are the same risk factors that cause Alzheimer's disease, or increase our risk for developing Alzheimer's disease. So not managing diabetes, eating a fat-laden or cholesterol-laden diet, not maintaining good physical activity, all of the things that give rise to poor cardiovascular health give rise to Alzheimer's disease as well. We need to maintain good flow and bathing blood around our brain to provide it with nutrients, to provide it with all of the goodies that the brain needs, just like the rest of our body, to survive and thrive. And so eating a heart-healthy diet is very important for minimizing the risk. Those are the risk factors we can control. So that was wearing your seatbelt, keeping your home free of clutter so you minimize falls, taking any precaution you can to keep that head safe, eating a diet that is rich in vitamin B, folic acid, your leafy green vegetables. This is very important. Fruits and vegetables that are high in antioxidants, like your blueberries and a variety of berries, actually. One is often refers to the Mediterranean diet. This is very low saturated fat, but high omega-3 fatty acids, so lots of fish. You're minimizing your red meat, keeping it in your diet, but not the primary focus of your diet. If your grains should be whole grains, more complex carbohydrate to break down and utilize as fuel. So wheats, multi-grain breads, high fiber breads, those are going to be not only heart healthy, but brain healthy. As we just heard a lot about, staying socially, intellectually, and physically engaged makes a difference. And not only relying on one aspect, I don't want to discourage anything that you're doing today, but I want to emphasize breath. I want you to think about how can you create variety in those activities. Don't rely exclusively on the crossword puzzles. Mix it up a bit, right? Play your pickleball, play golf, join a card group, a book club, pick up an instrument. You don't have to be Mozart. Just pick it up and start tooling around on it. Take, Rosetta Stone is available online. Just dabble in a new language. You don't have to become fluent. Just try to keep all of the aspects of our cognitive ability engaged and stimulated. That will go a long way for reasons I'll describe in a few minutes. And then finally, anything, again, that is heart healthy, including your physical levels of activity, is brain healthy.
You have been listening to Dr. Jessica Banco with her discussion on dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The rest of her talk will continue on our next episode. If you would like more information on the Byrd Alzheimer's Institute, you can visit health.usf.edu/Byrd. That's health.usf.edu/BYRD. If you would like more information on the Brain HQ exercises, as discussed previously on this program, you can visit brainhq.com. And as always, if you would like more information on mental health and aging resources in our area, such as our local support groups and symposiums, you can visit mentalhealthandaging.org or call the Coalition at 813-419-4902. Thanks again to Dr. Benko and the USF Health Byrd Alzheimer's Institute for contributing to today's program. Be sure to tune into our next episode where our goal is to provide all of our South Shore community neighbors with aging well options for both mind and body. For Debbie Canine, this has been Jonathan Guzman, inviting you to enjoy all the programming on our local radio station. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again after a while.